And here we go with Mike Renier, our basketball insider. Yes, it's the end of July. Yes, Patriots training camp is underway. And yes, Mike, we're talking Celtic basketball.
Right. We should also mention the Red Sox losing streak is still kind of pretty much intact only. But here it is. You're right. July 26th, tomorrow the 27th, and we're talking Celtics because all of a sudden, it seems out of nowhere, yesterday, the general public is made aware that the Celtics are considering a possible trade of Jalen Brown and a major package in exchange for Kevin Durant, who, of course, is one of the all-time great NBA players. But, of course, it would come with a caveat, the fact that Kevin Durant is 33 years old, will be 34 in a month or so. And it's the rumor mill is never lacking in the summertime. But that's a big one right there, you know?
All right. We're going to get into it in detail here. But, of course, my knee-jerk reaction is, are you kidding me? You're going to break up the Celtics for Kevin Durant? Seriously? I mean, how'd that work with Kyrie? How'd that work when he left OKC? I mean, no. Just, I don't care. He's one of the greatest of all time. You got a team here. You got a team that is playing as a team. It's coalescing as a team. It's getting better and better. The kids are getting more and more intelligent on the court, and like, I don't want to see it. And of course, I'm a Marcus Smart fan as well, but I also love Jalen Brown. So that's my knee jerk. However, it's all over ESPN and all these sports networks, all over Boston Talk Radio. And Mike, you tell me first your critique of this whole thing and how you look at it.
Well, yesterday was a knee jerk reaction. It was the same as yours, and it hasn't changed 24 hours later, because first of all, this trade may take, if it happens at all, it may take a month or two to develop, because it's there's so many ramifications here, because what the Brooklyn Nets want in return for Kevin Durant is really a massive sum. You know, it's like that guy trying to buy Twitter for $244 billion, you know? I mean, you mentioned Marcus Smart. One of the proposed packages would be Jalen Brown, Marcus Smart, and a bunch of draft picks for Kevin Durant. Another package was that we've seen is Jalen Brown and Derek White and draft picks for Kevin Durant. I don't like either of those.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Celtics would be giving up far too much. All right, I guess if you look at what the Celtics are looking at, and people want that trade, what they're looking at is the fact that the window of opportunity for winning a championship would be wide open this coming season, meaning Durant and Jason Tatum as the anchors of that team, along with Malcolm Brogdon and other Danilo Gallinari and the returning players, would give them a great opportunity to beat Golden State or whoever the Western Conference would be represented by. But we're talking Durant. He's been only played 90 games in the past three seasons because of injuries. 90 of a possible, 270 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a good ratio. And he's going to be a year older. I think within the next month or so, he turns 34. All right. Still a phenomenal player. Has always kept himself in great shape. Would probably play hard. It could get you 35, 40 points in the NBA Finals per game. But it might be just a one year window of opportunity, and then what are the Celtics left with? An aging player who can't do it anymore, and they'd become a mediocre team, I think, pretty quickly. Whereas if you keep Jalen Brown and Jason Tatum together, with the addition of Malcolm Brogdon, with Derek White, who they acquired last year, with Danilo Gallinari, a veteran guy who can score off the bench in bunches, to me, they have a much longer window of opportunity to win championships over the next 4 or 5 or 6 years if they can keep that core group together, okay? So I guess what you're looking at here is, do you want immediate gratification and the possibility of winning a championship next June, or do you want a 4 or 5 year window of opportunity?
Well,
I prefer the 4 or 5 year window, because there's no guarantee that even with Kevin Durant in the lineup this coming season, there's no guarantee they're going to get there because of Durant's recent injury history.
I love Kevin Durant as well. I mean, I think you can't deny his greatness. But that said, I agree with everything you just said. And listening, watching, you know, not CNN, but ESPN and all these other things, and reading this stuff in the papers and the Globe, people are clamoring. Those who favor the trade, I should say, are clamoring for this championship. That's a one-year deal.
Right.
And the thing that I like, Mike, is the chemistry of this team. Watching the Celtics the second half of the season, notwithstanding the fact, okay, they didn't win the championship, but damn, they were fun to watch.
Yeah, and they were together. And of course, you know, I think Jason Tatum made a concerted effort to include Jaylen Brown in all the, let's say, the, you know, the hugging and all that stuff, rattery that you see on the court. I think Tatum made a conscious effort to include Jaylen Brown as, like, an upper-level star like he is, in saying, you know, we're doing this together. It's not just me, Jason Tatum. It's not just me and you and Marcus Smart. It's all of us together. And I think here's the thing we have to look at, Rick, that we need to talk about. I would like to get your take on this, is the fact that when all these rumors cropped up about Jaylen Brown the last couple of days, Brad Stevens did not come out right away and say, oh, no, he's not part of any deal. We're not looking to trade him and all that stuff. That kind of tells you, without Brad Stevens issuing a word, that Brad Stevens has made contact with the Nets or vice versa, and Jaylen Brown would be part of a package. So now already there's going to be some damage here to Jaylen Brown's ego, and everybody these days has a bruised ego when their names are mentioned in trade talks.
Yeah.
So
well,
you kind of, in a sense, at least in July here, or August, you've lost Jaylen Brown's confidence in the Celtics wanting him, okay? So you have to kind of, immediately, that's going to be Udoka's and Brad Stevens' first priority would be to repair any damage if a trade doesn't happen.
Well, you know,
they're still going to have to repair the damage that Jaylen Brown thinks, well, the Celtics don't really want me, you know?
Maybe. But I see the other side of it in that talk about ego. Okay, we're resuming now with Mike Grenier. Sorry for the interruption. But, you know, got to take care of the cars. I don't know where we were, Mike. Do you remember the last thing?
We were talking about the hurt feelings that Jaylen Brown was feeling.
Yeah.
Because his name, and that's the nature of the beast these days. Every player who is rumored to be traded, you know, a lot of these trades don't happen because they're rumors, but the players still feel like, okay, my team doesn't want me anymore, and all that stuff. So I think that's where the Celtics are going to be at with Jaylen Brown, at least after the rumors die down, or maybe if the trade, obviously if the trade is made, and it's made.
Okay. Well, here's my thought. First of all, that's certainly true of these young kids. And Jaylen Brown, as great an athlete as he is still a young kid.
Young guy. Yeah.
As is Jason Tatum. They're growing.
Yep.
And one of the things I've read is that, to be included in a trade for arguably one of the top 10 players of this century. Of all time.
Well, he's a top 75 already.
Okay, let's do that. Top 75 of all time. That's not too shabby.
No, that's not too shabby.
Secondly, I'll be, you know, if it happens, I'll be going to New York City. That's not too shabby. Yep. And also, you know, we got a contract situation coming up here in a couple of years. Now, my thought my thought is that Brad Stevens knows all of that.
Of course,
Ime Udoka knows these kids. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of manipulation here where they want Jaylen to sign an extension, to beef the contract up and say, hey, you know what? We want you to stay here, brother. But if you can't commit to us, then what are we going to do?
Right, exactly.
So it becomes more and more intriguing as we go along.
Oh, I agree. There's a lot of intrigue in this whole thing. And you're right, the contract extension, if the Celtics were to do that, and of course, we don't know what the rules and by when they can offer it and all that, but that would be a sign to Jaylen Brown. Yeah, they want me around for the next 5 or 6 years because we have a window of opportunity. You mentioned a great word before, both camaraderie and chemistry, two words that are great words, because with the team and the way they approached the playoffs last season, this past season, beating the Milwaukee Bucks, the defending champions at the time, and beating the Nets, by the way, and Durant in four games.
Right.
And then, you know, going six games with Golden State and beating Miami in the conference final. I mean, that tells you they're on the right path. And when you add Brogdon and Danilo Gallinari to that mix, I say, if it's not broken, you know, don't fix it.
There you go.
Not only is it not broken, but they've added some valuable pieces to the mix since the Golden State series ended. So why would you want to mess with that?
I want to ask you about chemistry because one of the things that frequently comes up when I talk with high school coaches, Mike, is I ask about, you know, the personalities of each team, whether it's hockey, basketball, or football, whatever, and some of the teams really do take on a personality en masse. And one of the things that is always mentioned with the teams that are most successful is chemistry. In other words, the top kids work with each other, but they also work with the kids who aren't on top. The younger kids are mentored by the older kids, and there's a sense of real team. In your experience, Mike, can you comment on chemistry and from what you have observed either with the pros or the kids?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see it at the high school level all the time because they're more impressionable at age 16, 17, and 18. So you can kind of mold them. If you have a great coach and if you have great captains on a team, they can mold them into a real close unit. You know, it's not as potent a thing in the pros because it's a business and players move on to new contracts and all that. But in this case with the Celtics, you could see that chemistry developing as the season progressed when they were a 500 team and all of a sudden something snapped into them. Udoka's very candid talks with them finally kicked in. And the more they won, you could see how it was like they all had their eyes grew larger because they could see the prize at the end of the journey, you know? And I could see that chemistry. You could see it from game to game, week to week, and month to month. And by the play, they were all in. They were all in on the playoffs. And I can't see how that would change in the offseason here and going into next season because they've added such good pieces. And, I mean, one of the reasons Danilo Gallinari, he could have gotten a better offer elsewhere. He signed with the Celtics because he felt they have the best chance of winning it next year. And Brogdon is thrilled. Malcolm Brogdon, who's a team-oriented player anyway, is thrilled to be here, whether he comes off the bench as the sixth man, which will probably be the case, because I don't think Udoka's going to want to mess with the starting lineup and remove Marcus Smart as the point guard. So you're adding some really valuable players who are known to be team players, specifically Gallinari and specifically Brogdon. And, you know, Derek White, who came along later in the season this past year, fits in terms of being a great teammate. So to me, all the elements of a championship team are there, you know, if they can get off to a good start and just if they're all in from the beginning, maybe the next season they win 55, 60 games as opposed to 51.
Mm-hmm.
Because they certainly have the talent, you know, obviously barring serious injuries to a guy like Robert Williams or an older player like Horford, barring serious injuries, I can see that team winning a lot of games next year and being a number one seed going into the playoffs. So to me, as a fan, as someone who follows the game closely, and you do too, Rick, and so does Tim Kearns, and you don't want to mess with something that looks so potentially great right now. It's sort of like watching when Belichick had those great Patriot teams with Brewski and Richard Seymour in the early 2000s, and in the middle period with Brady being a... You don't want to mess with that roster, you know what I mean? And right now, I don't want to screw this up by offering Jaylen Brown to anybody. So... I'd stay with the team you got because it's not really the team you had back in June. They've added Brogdon and Danilo Gallinari who are going to add to their power, you know. So, therefore, take a shot with this team. You have a really good shot over the next two or three years in particular to win with the team they have put together right now.
Well, you know, if Kevin Durant were up on waivers, I'd claim him on waivers. That would be
sure.
Okay. But so the missing piece from listening to you and Tim, because we, you know, you guys, you almost got them to the championship this year, so now you guys are gonna, you're gonna get them over the hump. The missing piece is a big man in the middle as a backup. So how do they fill that in?
Well, I think Brad Stevens, his initial choice will be to get a veteran backup, and at this point, teams aren't giving veteran backups, you know, I mean, veteran centers or anything like that, because they're too valuable. It's so hard to find, even when they're 33, 34 years old. So I think I actually watched the Summer League games in Las Vegas where it was 115 degrees,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of those guys that were playing in the Summer League that have been around for 3 or 4 years but have played in that G League in Maine, or Calvin Galley, this kid who's like a 6'10", who averaged... In the Summer League, he played like 5 or 6 games. He averaged 14 points and 8 or 9 rebounds a game. And I read some comments by him after one. They signed him to a two-way contract at the end of the Summer League, meaning he can one of those players who could play a certain number of games with their minor league, so-called minor league team, and he also is eligible to play a certain number of games with the Varsity Celtics, okay? His comments after the Celtics signed him to two-way were so incredibly articulate and perfectly team-oriented. He was saying, well, I know what the Celtics need. I've worked on this in the off season. My footwork, because I watch. He actually said, I cannot wait to meet Al Horford.
Okay.
Because he said Horford is the perfect player, big man, in his approach and his the way he has crafted his game over the years. He said all this in the newspaper and said, this is the player I want to look forward to meeting because I know I can learn so much from him. But I've already been studying film on footwork and proper rebounding position and angles and playing defense. I was reading this and thinking, is this a 22 or 23-year-old guy?
Right.
Those guys are usually cocky and think they have it made.
Yep.
No, this is a guy who wants to learn. And at least in the summer league, I know he's playing players of similar caliber. He's not playing NBA talent quite yet. But if you're shining in that summer league, well, then you're showing some promise. And you might make the end of the bench with the Celtics this year and be that third guy, that third center who could spell Robert Williams and Horford. There's some gems out there in the summer league that add to the bench depth. And whether Brad Stevens has to go that route, I don't know. But that's one eligible candidate I know. I was very impressed with him. There were a couple of the guys that were impressive in summer league. You can't count on them to be playing against the Golden State Warriors in the finals. But if they could stop molding them into good players this year, that's helpful. But I think ideally Brad Stevens wants to look at a veteran big man that might get cut. And that wouldn't happen until training camp begins in October or September. You're not going to see anything happen on that front, I don't think, until a couple of months from now.
And what's the kid's name again, and what were his stats in summer league?
Kevin Gelly averaged like it's like K-A-B-E-N-G-E-L-E, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. He looked great in three or four games, and he's like a legit 6'10", 14.5 points, and almost 9 rebounds
okay.
a game.
Oop.
And that's not playing a full game because they play 10-minute quarters, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not instead of a 48-minute game, it's a 40-minute game. So the stats are going to be downsized a little bit. And actually, the kid who actually surprised me was the draft pick, Davison, who played at Alabama for 1 year. He's only 19 years old. He averaged only 8.5 points at Alabama. He had a game in a summer league where he had 26 points, 10 assists, and 9 rebounds, almost a triple-double.
Mm-hmm.
And he surprised me because everything I read about him was that he needs 2 or 3 more years of seasoning.
Mm-hmm.
To be a competitive guy in the NBA, but he had 2 outstanding games that made you think, you know what, he might make the jump this year.
Wow.
I'm not saying that's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but based on a couple of games anyway, where the Celtics, you know, coaches were right there, and Udoka couldn't coach them like as the first level guy. He would be watching as a spectator. He was watching as a spectator. But the Celtics assistant coaches are working directly with these young guys, and Davison looked, I don't want to say ready, but he's certainly on an upward path to being an NBA player. And that's surprising because everything I had read about him after the draft was, well, he's 3 or 4 years away if he makes it at all.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago, some kid from Indiana, Red Auerbach, drafted as a junior. And I was thinking, huh? You're drafting a junior? He's got 1 more year to go? Indiana State, I think it was?
It was Indiana State.
So, you never know. And
You never know.
I'll never forget that. I said, what the hell is Auerbach doing drafting a junior?
Yeah, and we should tell people that guy's name is Larry Bird.
Yes, we should.
he became fairly famous.
Yeah, and fairly good. All right, Mike, enough of the Celtics. I want to go off topic here while I have you on the line. I just want to ask you, you mentioned the Red Sox. And one thing I want to talk about and ask you about sort of in a positive vein, hoping it comes to pass. You know, they're talking about now buyers versus sellers and all this stuff among, you know, talk radio and all this stuff. But I'll tell you what, in the last 10 years, Xander Bogaerts has been a thing of beauty. He is an articulate young man, an intelligent young man, just gives everything he's got on the field. He's a leader. He's a terrific ball player. And in terms of filling in for Big Poppy, man, Devers is just, Rafael Devers is a find. How can you possibly justify letting either of those guys go? Why? The Red Sox have more money than God. Why don't they pay these guys?
Rick, I couldn't agree more. I think, here's what I believe happened. When Dave Dombrowski was there, his reputation, and he lived up to it in Boston, was overpay the players and hope you get a championship. Okay, and he did. He overpaid the players, and they won a championship. And then he walked away, or they had to get rid of him because those players are going to get paid for the next, 20 to 30 years. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So they had a budget now all of a sudden that they had to strap into because Dombrowski overpaid all his players. Now the next generation of management is thinking, oh, my God, we can't go the affluent route. We can't pay these players. We can't overpay these players. So they've sort of adjusted. No, they have adjusted to pay players much less money, and then they might let Bogaerts walk, and they might let Devers walk. And I think, like you just said, those would be two huge mistakes. I particularly like Devers because he's much more of a power hitter than Bogaerts. But Bogaerts is a smooth fielder. He's a great role model for all the players. He's going to have many years ahead of him. But Devers is a young guy who potentially could hit your 50 homers several consecutive years.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he wants to be here. And he could become the face of the franchise as well. Kind of a junior Poppy, so to speak. So, no, I'm not interested in getting rid of him at all. I think you have to sign him long term, and Bogaerts would be the second in line, I believe. And after that, I don't know what, because the game that I saw Friday night, Rick, and if people, that's the game they lost 28-5.
Right.
And, when that ball dropped behind the center field of Duran for the inside of the park grand slam, and he took three or four steps, walking steps towards the ball, and Verdugo had to come over from left field and pick it up. By then, the guy was already home. To me, that was one of the laziest plays I've ever seen a pro athlete take.
How many games do you think he would be back in if he worked for Bill Belichick?
Oh, my God. He would already be playing for the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was...
I don't understand Cora. Alex Cora, to me, I lost a lot of respect for him because, Dick Williams, a guy who some people are not familiar with back in the 60s, brought the 1967 team to the World Series when they had finished ninth in 1966, as you might remember.
I do.
And Dick Williams would have pulled out that Duran kid at that very
moment. On the spot. On the spot. Oh, yeah.
After that laziness. He wouldn't have waited till the half inning in the dugout and then called him out and then said, you're sitting here. And I know in reading the Boston Globe and people comment on stories, 98% of the people who commented on the story about Duran said, ship him to Worcester for a while. And I don't understand what Cora was doing him. Not only did he let him play that rest of that game, but he was in the starting lineup on Saturday. He was in the starting lineup. I couldn't understand Cora not addressing that issue head on and saying, you know what, kid? You got to show a lot more hustle than that if you want to play for the Boston Red Sox.
Absolutely. And, the Red Sox ticket prices, I think, are probably the highest in the league.
Yeah, they are. Average price, yeah.
Yeah, the highest in the league. And so when you take your family or whoever to a game and you want to go see a game and you see something like that, man, hey, give me my money back. This wasn't a professional game. This wasn't a major league game.
No, it was not.
Good God.
And, of course, they went on and lost Saturday and they lost on Sunday to a Toronto team that's just... at least the beginning of the week was only two or three games ahead of them for the expanded. Cora is still talking, glass is half full, only three games out of a wild card spot. But that's just kind of phantom because it's like the NBA now having 11 or 12 teams in the playoffs, having the play-in games and all that. I mean, they're basically a 500 team that's really dipped since the beginning of July.
Okay, but you got to handle the fact that they're missing half their starters. I mean, the starters on the field, and they're missing half of their starting pitching as well. So,
Chris Sale obviously is still.
Oh, I'm done. I'm done.
You just don't know what he's got left.
I'm done.
He's a headache off the field.
He's won
11 games.
He's won 11 games and been paid $135 million. So that's $13 million a game.
Yeah.
Please.
I pointed out that a guy that you. Justin Verlander, now with Houston, age 39, has 13 wins this year and a 2.00 ERA. At age, he's won more games in half a season than Chris Sale has won in four years.
I don't wish anybody any ill will, but I'm done. I'm done with him, man.
Oh, yeah. I am done with him the way that we're done with, I don't know, basketball players that we've talked about.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see where Kyrie ends up. So on how he ends up in the long run, Mike.
Yeah, how's Kyrie going to feel, by the way, if Durant leaves? Because
that's the funniest thing of all time.
When looking like he and Durant are going to leave until the championship.
And Kyrie says, "Oh, I think I'll stay because nobody else wanted him." And then Kevin says, "I'm out of here."
Yeah, exactly. That shows you how many people Kyrie has offended, even his own teammates.
All right, Mike. Anything else in the attic there that you want to open up?
No, you know what? Heading to Patriots training camp tomorrow, July. That's always fun to watch Belichick. And, you know, Mac Jones, I think, is, you know, Brady was such a great face of the franchise for so long, and I don't think any quarterback is going to equal his accomplishments. But I tell you what, for a young player that kids can look up to, I'm talking high school. Rick, you and I have dealt with high school players for 40, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
What a kid to look up to, mm-hmm. Mac Jones. And even if the surrounding talent isn't as good as the Patriots championship teams, he's a great kid to look up to. He does great things in the community. He's a very good quarterback who could become great. But I'm just saying, as a role model and as a solid NFL quarterback, I like Mac Jones in that spot for New England, a team. And for kids, high school, college, who look up to players, he's a guy to look up to, I think.
He, in my opinion, Mike, in 1 year, has already demonstrated more personality. He's more personable than Tom Brady ever was. And Brady is the greatest of all time. I absolutely love Tom Brady on the field.
Yeah.
But watching Mac Jones in the community, serving ice cream, working his tail off and trying to do the right thing, and being humble. Tom Brady had sort of, should I say, a fake humility? I don't even know if I should say that because he always
initially, Rick, right? Because as we know, he was a sixth round pick,
right?
Number 199. So I don't think he even knew that he was going to be as great as he became. But with Mac Jones, I totally get what you're saying. He seems incredibly humble. Hey, he's worked hard in the off season already in terms of watching film and asking coaches, how can I get better? And I think didn't he recruit teammates to work out?
Oh yeah,
summer workouts.
Yep. Yep.
That's the type of guy he is.
Yeah, and again, he's just I don't know, he just has so much fun. He just enjoys it, and it's very refreshing. And again, never taking anything away from the GOAT, man. He's just unbelievable. And it's going to be fun watching him this year again too. It will be. I mean, he's got to be an alien. He can't be human.
You're right. And, you know, of course, the talk is who's actually coaching Mac Jones, the offensive coordinator. But, you know, I read something interesting today, Rick, and we can wrap this up. Matt Patricia, who might be the offensive coordinator, although he's not named, I think the reason Belichick can't name him is because the Detroit Lions are paying his salary as long as he's not officially called a coordinator.
Oh.
It has something to do with his contract, mm-hmm. okay? And therefore, I think Belichick, being close with Matt Patricia, wants him to get a full salary from the Detroit Lions.
Sure.
And if I read that properly, because as you know, contract language is so complex these days that you and I and many others who think we know our stuff, we have no idea what these contracts mean.
Well, not in that, but those who be dissing Patricia, let's not forget he is a rocket scientist. So
yes, he was at MIT, right?
That's right. So
we have to respect that.
Amen. That's sports journalist Mike Grenier with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.